You are the CEO of Coastline. First question I'm going to ask you is, what's the status of the agreement you have signed with the Somali oil minister?
I'll answer that, Arun. But first off, I want to wish you and your listeners a happy Ramadan. I hope that they're able to spend time with their families during this holiday season. If you would give me just 2 minutes, I'd like to get a couple of points out there, ahead of the rest of your questions. The Coastline has been in Somalia for a very long time. It's committed to the country. The revenues that will be generated from the PSAs that we've signed, if we're successful, will be transformative for the people of Somalia and its government. Under the terms of the PSAs, about 75% of the oil revenue will go to the Somali people. So it's a fair PSA. And I'd like your listeners to understand that the reason this opportunity exists is because Coastline and its shareholders have spent a lot of money, and we shot seismic data offshore Somalia to image the subsurface out there. And so we believe that there's a huge opportunity, but if we had not spent our money and spent our time and done the interpretations, that opportunity would not exist. So, we have already done that. And it's money that, we can't get back unless we're ultimately successful. I want to tell everybody up front, Arun, that we are not corrupt. We don't need to be corrupt. No Somali government official has ever asked me to make any kind of illegal payment. It's never happened. I would also like to stress that no Somali politician is the shareholder of Coastline. We are independent of the government. Lastly, we understand that the political process is drawn out. It's somewhat disturbing to us that we've been, caught up in that process. But nonetheless, we will stay the course. We will continue on through the current uncertainties. Now, in answer to your direct question, Arun, right now the Somali Attorney General has launched a process to do an investigation to look into the process around which the PSAs were signed. He has interviewed, one of our employees. We're aware that he's interviewed a number of other people. We hope that his report will be issued shortly. We're confident that his report will indicate that the process that we went through was fair and reasonable and in complete compliance with Somali law. And our expectation is that we will then get some form of clearance level from the FGS, and then we'll pay our signature bonuses, and then we'll get to work.
The President of Somalia, the Prime Minister, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, said the agreement you have signed on February 15 is null and void. What is your response to that?
Yes, we're aware of that. We received a letter from the Foreign Ministry. We have responded to that. I won't go into the legal details of the analysis, but we believe quite firmly that our PSAs that we signed are in full legal, that they're legally valid and that they're in the full effect.
And why do you think that? Why do you think it's illegal? Why the government argues it was illegal?
Yeah, well, I think that analysis is incorrect. If you go back to the signing of the Somali Petroleum Law, the Somali Petroleum Law back in February of 2020, the Petroleum Law, just to refresh your memory, it was signed by the Parliament, and then it was signed by the President, and it was legally gazetted. The Petroleum Law sets forth in great detail the process that has to be followed in order to make a PSAs legally valid and binding. And we followed that process, excruciatingly closely. We had numerous meetings with the Somali Petroleum Authority, with the Oil Ministry, with their advisors and their attorneys. We talked to the IMF at one point. We made presentations to the IMCC, which is the Interministerial Succession Committee. We engaged with all the stakeholders who had input into the process, and we took all those things into account, and then we finalized negotiations with the SPA, the Somali Petroleum Authority, in January of this year, and then executed the PSAs in February. So we followed the process, you know, that was set forth in the law, and we followed it very, very carefully and very closely.
The president of Somalia has issued a decree in August last year, and I've also confirmed that the parliamentary committee for the two chambers of the parliament has written a letter to all the oil companies, telling them that no agreement can be signed during the transition period, during the election. The president's decree clearly stated that no agreements can be entered until after the election. Why did you ignore this direction?
Yes, so we did not ignore anything, Arun. We took that into account. Again, I don't want to get into the detailed legal arguments, because there's quite a few of them. But we certainly, before we signed the PSAs in February, we consulted with the ministry and with the SPA, and we were assured that both the president and the prime minister were aware of the process and that they were fine with us signing. We're not reckless enough to go forward and do something like that without knowing that or believing anyway, that everything was fine at the top. And again, I'll remind you, under the petroleum law, we're not required to talk to either the prime minister or the president. But we did not talk to either one of them directly. But we did ask on multiple occasions if they were aware of the process, and we were assured that they were.
And who gave you that assurance?
Yeah, well, it would have been the Minister of Oil and certain members of the SPA.
And now that they were not on board, clearly based on their statement, how do you feel?
Well, I feel confused. I feel let down. I feel disappointed. The opportunity here, Harun, is gigantic. I don't want to, understate what the opportunity here is. If you look at what happened in Guyana, in 2013, there was no oil production, and they shot seismic data. Next year, they'll be producing 400,000 barrels a day. That's $1 billion a month to the government. And Somalia shot their seismic data, i.e., we shot it, in 2014, only 1 year later. And next year, Somalia's production will be zero. We don't even have, effective PSAs yet, at least as far as some people believe, although we believe that they are effective. But it's just frustrating that we can't get to work. We can't do the job we need to do. This is a gigantic opportunity. It needs to be taken advantage of. This could be the keystone. This could be the thing that takes Somalia out of its, poverty-stricken, state that it's in now and allows it to develop. This could be what it needs. We need to prove or disprove that there's, a lot of oil and gas offshore Somalia. We think that there is.
Give me a breakdown of the financial terms of this agreement.
Yeah, okay. The breakdown is largely consistent with the model form of PSA that the ministry has put out there. On their website, there's a 5% royalty that comes right off the top. Profits are split 50-50. There's a 30% income tax on whatever profits the contractor, i.e. Coastline, makes. The government has the opportunity to back in for, as much as 20%. That's a free carry, so the government, gets that without having to pay anything. And, there's various fees and things, too. During the exploration phase, we'll be paying, approximately $1 million. Well, not approximately. It's exactly $1 million per PSA per year during the exploration phase. So, it's a fair deal for the Somali people, in our view. And that's the view of the advisors who were advising the Somali Petroleum Authority when this was all being put together.
Okay, if I take you back a bit, last year in January, you came to Mogadishu, prepared to sign, and then the negotiation is broke down, it was put off. When did the negotiation renew, and what has changed between January and February 2022?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking that question. That's a real key question, and it deserves you know, some analysis. So, on January 4th of the last year, we had finished negotiating with the SPA and the ministry, and we flew to Mogadishu to assign the PSAs. Just before the signing ceremony was to occur, the Minister of Finance indicated that he did not believe that the IMCC had properly approved the PSA. We were disappointed, of course, to hear that, but we took into account that certainly the IMCC, you know, under the Somali laws, you know, does have jurisdiction over the tax rate and does have jurisdiction over the royalty rate. So we did not sign the PSAs, last year on January 4th. We waited for the IMCC to meet to get their, input, to get the input from, you know, from their various advisors. They asked us to move the royalty rate up to 5%, which we agreed to, and they said that the tax rate would need to stay at the 30% for a tax on the income. And that was all documented, on or around October of the last year. So it took basically, 10 or 11 months for the, for the IMCC to go through their process. And then once that happened, then we finished up. We accepted the 5% royalty, and they had a few other things that they wanted us to change. And so we changed all of those, and then we did that in January of this year, and then signed everything in February.
Okay. So what I'm learning is that during that meeting in Mogadishu, the government or some members of the government were asking for a 12% royal, up to 12% royalty, up to 60% share, and a lower contractual timeline of 20 years. Rather than 30 years, which the current agreement is based on. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of terms in those PSAs. It's a large document. There are many, many commercial terms that have to be negotiated. I've never heard of a 20-year PSA, actually, ever. So I don't know where that came from. The model form is the 30 years, and that's what we're using. The royalty rate, there were a great deal of numbers, Haroon, that were being bandied about. We talked about doing a royalty rate that was based on the price of oil, i.e. when the oil was higher, the price of oil was higher, then the royalty goes up. We talked about, a whole range of different possibilities. But to tell you the truth, the IMCC and the Ministry of Finance, they, ran their own process, and they came up with their own recommendation. And really, we had very little input into it. They told us what they wanted, and that was 5%. I would point out that in Guyana, which we referred to, but we referred to Guyana because it's been such a massive success. The royalty rate in Guyana is 2%.
Okay. So tell Somalis who are Coastline Exploration.
Okay. Coastline Exploration is a group of veteran professionals. We have been in the oil business, almost all of us, over 40 years. We have been successful in multiple basins throughout the world. We've been successful in North America, South America, the Middle East, Russia, North Sea. Our board and our directors and our executives have been doing this for a very long time. We're well financed. We're excited about the possibility. We've been involved in this thing in a long time. You know, for a long time, we want to get to work. We want to prove that there's a working petroleum system. If we're successful, it's our view that that the Somali people are naturally entrepreneurial. That's one thing that I've learned about Somalis. And if we're successful, if we can de-risk this play, I'm confident that the Somali people will take to it. They'll form their own oil companies, their own service companies, and it's going to be a great thing for the entire country. And we want to be part of that.
Tell us the shareholders of Coastline, if you can.
Yeah, okay. We're a private company, and of course, we're not required to disclose our shareholders. But you've asked the question, and it's a fair question. I would point out, of course, that the minister and his team and the SPA, they know exactly who our shareholders are, and they have met a great many of them. The largest single shareholder is myself. I own about 15%. There's a guy and his son in the UK named Basil Shiblack, and they each own about 10%. So together they own about 20, which is more than me, but individually they own less than me. And then there's a Russian individual who owns about 5%. And the rest is various UK people and American investors.
Yeah, the question here is that some of the people who are involved in the company have got very controversial background, including Basil Shiblack, who has some oil interests in Venezuela amid the sanctions on that country. You also have the Russian oligarch, you mentioned it, Alexander Jabris, who also has some controversial background. How would you respond to this?
Yeah, well, I'll take the last one first. I don't believe there's any controversy around Alexander Jabris. He's very, very well respected. He has started and built up some very successful oil companies. His reputation actually is quite spotless. He is from Russia. He is a Russian, but it's unfair to paint all Russians as having something wrong with them simply because they're Russians. He's well known within the oil industry and well respected.
Let me come in there. He was in a list drawn by the United States of people who have connections with the Kremlin, with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the list you're referring to. He's not a sanctioned. If he were sanctioned, obviously that would be, a bad thing for me and for the other people in the company. You can read various things, but I don't know what you're referring to, but he's not sanctioned, and we have no reason to believe that he ever will be sanctioned.
And then you have Basil Shiblack.
Yeah, no, Basil, he has, he was one of the original founders of Ophir, which was a very successful oil company, back at about 2004, 2005. They drilled a giant discovery well offshore Tanzania, and that, turned out to be, a pretty good deal. We are aware that he has made some trips to Venezuela. That obviously has nothing to do with the Coastline. We're not, involved in any of that. He is not sanctioned, by the U.S. government, as far as I know. I've never heard that he is. I think he's been, pretty careful about what he's been doing down there. He does have, some expensive attorneys advising him, so I'm sure he'll be careful. But, whatever he's doing in Venezuela has absolutely nothing to do with us. And we're not actually aware in any detail of what it is.
Let me ask you a few questions about the back to the agreement and the process to the agreement. Who paid for the travel and accommodation of the Somali minister and the Somali delegation to Istanbul to sign this agreement?
Yes, so let me put some context around your question. If we fly to Mogadishu to do things, it's very expensive. The security costs us between $10,000 and $15,000 a day. It's difficult, for us to do. If we fly to Istanbul, it's very easy and very inexpensive. The hotels in Istanbul are much cheaper than they are in London. They're actually much, much cheaper than they are in Mogadishu, so we save money there. So, you know, it's in our interest to do things that are easy and simple and straightforward. We did pay for the delegation to fly to Istanbul. We paid directly for the flights. We did not pay the individuals. And we also paid for the hotels, which again were, you know, normal hotel rates. And then I want to make it very, very clear that before we do anything and pay anything that has anything to do with anybody in the government of Somalia, it's always reviewed by our anti-bribery and the corruption council before we make any such payments or any such commitments. And this, you know, was reviewed by them, and they determined that it was, you know, that it was fine under U.S. law and under Somali law. Again, out of convenience, it was, you know, much more convenient for us and much more convenient for, you know, for the Somalis, and they were, and the Somalis were, you know, were willing to do it. So yes, we did pay for it.
Well, the Somalis may have been willing to do it, but it gives the appearance of conflict of interest. Unethical conduct. Would you agree that?
No, I really don't agree. It was a working period. I mean, it was not a vacation. They came there. We had you know, long days of negotiation and meetings. It actually, I mean, it's not. I mean, for me, it's not fun, and I don't think it was fun for the Somalis. We came there for a you know, for a specific reason. And when we finished up, you know, we all left. We have to meet somewhere. And again, I'll just reiterate, from our standpoint, it's easier and cheaper to be in Istanbul. And overall, it's easier and cheaper for us to be in Istanbul.
Also, if you can talk about the criticism against this agreement, was that it was signed in a hotel in Istanbul, not in Somalia, behind closed doors, no media presence, and certainly it has not been publicized on the day of the signing. It was publicized 4 days later, and the Somali government only admitted or acknowledged it after the press release you issued. Address this.
Yeah, so, it was certainly signed behind closed doors in the sense that the doors were closed when it was signed, but, you know, it was not, you know, intended to be a secret ceremony. You know, certainly the people who were there, you know, knew about it, and it was our understanding that the, you know, that the high government officials, i.e. the prime minister and the president, you know, were fully aware of it. So, you know, we had no particular reason to hide anything. In terms of the release date, the minister indicated that out of respect, he wanted to go back and make a presentation both to the president and the prime minister before the press release went out. And so, you know, we agreed that it would go out, you know, that our press release would go out at noon on Saturday, which I think was either three or four days later. And that was really all there was to it. There was no intent to mislead anybody. And in fact, the press release, you know, in our view, did go out. You know, timely. It was, 4 days late, four days later. But you know, that seems perfectly reasonable to us.
But when the minister said to you, "I'm going back to Mogadishu, I'm going to brief the president and the prime minister," didn't that concern you that he didn't consult with them before signing the agreement?
No, not at all. We discussed that actually. He said that he wanted to go back and make a formal presentation, and that was you know, he felt out of respect that was the way that he wanted to play it. But you know, again, we didn't want to, you know, we don't want to get involved in the you know, toings and froings of the Somali politics. We were I'm repeating myself. We were told repeatedly by numerous people that the president and the prime minister were fully aware of what was going on. And we had no reason or really not to believe that. I mean, we were really, really surprised to find out.
But do you have any...
You know, when we woke up the next day that there was, you know, that there was resistance, we didn't expect it.
Do you have any proof or clearance from the president and the prime minister that they were on board?
No.
And there were suggestions that signing fee, the signature bonus, was originally $2 million rather than $1 million. When did that change?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to. The signature bonus in the PSAs is the $1 million. And that was the same signature bonus that it was in January 4th of 2021, i.e. last year. So, that never changed. I think what people may be referring to in the model form PSA, there is a $2 million number in there. But that's just from my standpoint, that's a starting negotiating point for the ministry and for the SPA. There's no country in Africa that has a signature bonus that high.
Question to coastline exploration. What track record do you have in the petroleum sector? And what's the capacity you have to produce oil and gas in Somalia?
Well, Coastline Exploration is a newly formed company. It was set up in 2018, and it was focused on Somalia. And the reason, Haroon, that we had to do that was because nobody else, wanted to get involved, and so we had to form a new company. So what you have to look to, then, is the track record of the people behind Coastline, its executives and its board of directors. And as I think I indicated earlier, we have tremendous experience. We've all been doing this over 40 years. We've been successful in literally every continent on the globe except for Antarctica, because no one produces oil and gas down there. I would challenge anybody to find a board of directors and a set of executives who have done more than we have over the past 40 years. We've just been, I myself have been responsible. I've run oil companies that found multiple billion barrel fields. Alexander Japarizi, who we talked about earlier, has done even more. Simon Ayad, I don't know how many giant oil fields he's been involved in finding, but it's certainly a dozen or more. The same with Jake Ulrich. He's been involved in numerous discoveries. And in terms of the capacity, we have deep pockets. We've already spent about $70 million of our own money. As I told you, our signature bonus money is sitting in the bank. That's another $7 million. It's ready to be paid. My shareholders are ready, willing, and able to put up the money to drill the first exploration wells. So we have the capacity to do it. We have the experience to do it. We have the expertise to do it.
And what's the timeline? What's your timeline in working in Somalia if this agreement goes into effect?
Yeah, well, once we get the clearance letter, that we hope to get soon, we'll get right to work. We've already done a lot of work, but we haven't obviously ordered supplies. We haven't ordered drill pipe, drill supplies. We haven't put in any orders yet for anything because we don't actually have the agreements that they would be based on. It takes some time. We have to get in line with the rigs, but we would hope to be drilling. Let's see. This is April. We would hope to be drilling late first quarter 2024, maybe summer of 2024. The wells would be fairly quick to drill, 45 to 60 days, and then we would see results. Our desire would be to drill three wells in the first drilling campaign. That would be two offshore Gamadag and one offshore Southwest State. The structures that we would be targeting would be quite large. If one or more of them is successful, it would kick off the whole process. Really, another thing that I'd like to point out and make your readers or your listeners aware of, once the PSAs are signed with us and once we get to work, the other oil companies will quickly show up because they won't want us to get ahead of them. And so what you'll see is a lot of other companies coming in, including, well, I would expect, the super majors. And so I can see this thing developing, very, very quickly.
The other concern is that because once you get this agreement, you're going to farm out, sell this to a bigger company, and enjoy your profits. Your response.
Yeah, Arun, I'm laughing. I wish it was that easy. no, that's not the way it works. We're going to go. Our plan is, as I described it, our plan is to drill, you know, the first set of exploration wells. Now, I don't want to mislead you or anybody else. If somebody comes in that has the capacity and the capability, and they ask to farm in, we'll certainly talk to them. But I would point out that the ministry and the SPA, you know, have to be involved in that process, and they would have to approve any such farm out. And in fact, it's our expectation that they will be the ones coming to us and asking us to farm out, because they will probably want to see more companies, with additional balance sheets. And if they do it properly, which I know they will, they'll, you know, quickly do a follow-on bid round. And then those companies can then, you know, farm into us and participate in the bid round. And that's the way that they'll really leverage, you know, that the ministry and the SPA will be able to really leverage their position.
Okay, I have three more questions, then I'm going to wrap it up. I already took longer than I told you. I apologize for that. One question is that the Somali government wanted to go through the process of licensing bid rounds, and this agreement that you have signed it with the Somali oil minister did not go through that. There were no licensing bid round, and as a result of that, this agreement does not provide value for money for Somalia. Why didn't you go through licensing bid round?
Yes. Yeah, so as I indicated in my opening statement, the agreement that we're operating under, it was a seismic option agreement that was signed back in 2013. And under that agreement, Sumo Oil and Gas, which was the company that we bought out in 2018, they spent $42 million and they shot seismic offshore Somalia in return for the right to negotiate, a series of PSAs. And so that's what we're doing right now. This does not prohibit in any way or stop the Somali ministry going forward with a bid round. And in fact, we would love them to do that, because that would make things easier for us, and it would just supplement what we're doing. And we tried to encourage that process in the past. We just certainly as I say, we'd love to see a bid round going out maybe later on this year or early next year. I think it would be well received, in the industry. I would point out, again, Guyana, which I keep mentioning, but I mention it because it's very instructive. In Guyana, the first set of PSAs were all direct negotiated, i.e. with Exxon and with the other companies that were involved, the Chinese company and Amerada Hest and Total Energies and the rest of them. Those were all direct negotiations. And just 3 days ago, Guyana came out with their first bid round. So they're going to do, bid rounds, presumably into the future. But the first set of PSAs that Guyana signed were all direct negotiated, which is the case here in Somalia as well.
There were allegations that the Somali oil minister has written a letter to Spectrum asking them to hand over seismic data that they have collected to Somo Oil, which is now Coastline Exploration. Did that happen? What's your response?
No, it never happened. You're seeing one side of a three-sided trade. I don't know why people grab onto things like this and they imagine some sort of dark conspiracy. Back in 2018, when the minister and his team were in London, they were trying to put together a bid round. I think I mentioned that earlier, and they asked us to surrender a couple of our blocks to make the bid round better. and we said we were willing to do that. In the recompense, we asked for a copy of the spectrum seismic data. The people at the spectrum said, at least I understood that they said that that was fine. But nothing ever happened because the bid round never went forward. You know, we kept our blocks and the spectrum kept their data. So it was an entirely above board commercial, I wouldn't call it arrangement. It was a commercial proposition. You know, it never went forward, and you know, no data was ever exchanged, and no blocks were ever given up. So, I myself have never, spent a lot of time thinking about it.
Okay. The other question is, you earlier at the beginning you mentioned that North Somalia has a share in your company, but previously we knew that Hassan Khayre, the former prime minister, had a share in the company. Can you talk about how that divorce ended, or if Hassan Khayre is still a shareholder, and if you have offered in the future a stake to the current oil minister? There are three questions in it, but hopefully you can address all of them.
Okay, well, if I forget one of them, please re-ask it. They're all easy to answer. I'll take the last one first. Obviously, we haven't offered anything to the current oil minister. That would be illegal and improper, and you know, we haven't done it. And he never asked for anything like that, so you know, I can address that one very easily. It is true that Hassan, back in 2013, when Soma Oil and Gas was formed, he did have an interest in the company of approximately 1 to 1.5%. I don't recall exactly what it was, but he did have an interest. When he became prime minister, he gave that up for zero consideration. And so he received nothing for his interest in Soma. And he obviously has no interest whatsoever in Coastline, which was formed after that. Steve, I think I'll answer two questions. Did I miss one?
Yeah, the other one was, are there any Somalis at the moment who have any stake in the company?
Yeah, so there's no Somalis that own shares in the company. Our director of African operations does have some options that he might be able to exercise in the future if we're successful, and that's for a relatively small percentage of the company. But that's an entirely normal arrangement. I mean, there's nothing. And again, it was reviewed by our anti-bribery and corruption council before we entered into the arrangement with him.